Well, last week, I preached my first sermon on Ecclesiastes ever. And I enjoyed it so much that I thought I'd do it again, even though it means taking a lection from another part of the church year and moving it to this Sunday. And of course, as you know, the part that I've chosen is from Ecclesiastes 3, the text we use when New Year's Day falls on a Sunday, which makes sense, right? It's a vision text, a broad perspective text, which is why the birds sang it in the space and time of the mid-60s and all that was going on there. It puts the question to us as persons and as a community, how do we experience our lives in this world? This chapter, chapter 3, follows on what I was trying to say last week when we looked at little excerpts from the first two chapters of the book. And I won't give you a summary of what I said or interpreted those first two chapters to say, but I will read a text that somebody sent me on Monday, which I thought was wonderful. A parishioner had been listening and sent me this text, and it said, "It's been a comfort for me to understand that we have a book where the author is saying more or less, nothing in my experience seems to line up with what I've been taught about life and the nature of God's promises. Everything's fleeting anyway and doesn't last. But rather than despair and depress, I'm going to trust in God regardless." That's a great takeaway from what I was trying to say, probably said better than anything I actually did say in the sermon. So we keep that in mind, what is going on in the first two chapters. But now the teacher, you'll remember Kohelet is the Hebrew name for this teacher who's taking on the persona of Solomon's wisdom. This teacher wants to say, yes, everything is fleeting. Nothing lasts. It's almost over before it begins. But still, there is a time for everything and a season for every activity under the sun. Everything has this breath-like quality to it, but everything is also in some way part of a greater whole that is good, that makes sense. There's a flow to the universe, and I think there's a bunch of books that have been written in the last 20 years with the word flow somewhere in the title. It just seems to be one of those hip words that we like to use. There's flow to the universe, and the person who is wise will seek to understand this flow and live life in light of its truth. So in order to drive that point home, the teacher uses a series of statements that contain polar extremes as a way of embracing what lies between them. We remember, of course, that in the ancient world, there was maybe a sundial in a major city somewhere or in the king's court, but there was no clock. There was no kind of incremental way of measuring time. How people understood time was their experiences in life and the changes they went through as they experienced those things. That's how time was measured. And of course, the seasons. So the first set of these polar extremes is we're meant to understand that all the rest that follows is contained within it. And so, of course, for human beings, for finite human beings, our ultimate inclusio, if you will, the polar extremes for us is there's a time to be born and a time to die. And then the rest of the statements flow from that, and there doesn't seem to be any rhyme or reason for how they're arranged necessarily, or for their content, or whether we're supposed to take them literally or metaphorically. Probably something like both, right? I mean, there's a time to tear and a time to sow. That would be something that would literally be experienced by almost every family in the ancient world where people made their own clothing. It also speaks to the relational and social fabric of a family and a community. We can get that metaphorically. Sometimes we can find a way to mend things in a community. Other times we have to, well, start again. Remake it. A time to mourn and a time to dance. You know, there's seasons for the different kinds of emotions that we experience. Time to let go and a time to celebrate new things and really get into it. Now, if I were to craft, or if we were to craft our own pairs, I'm sure we could come up with some interesting ones, right? In our modern world. I was joking with somebody the other day that there's a time for pizza, and then, wait for it, there's a time for dessert, right? My dear wife would say, Alan, there's a time to be on your phone, and then there's the time to clean the bathroom, which is overdue. Get on it. Seriously, though, this vision of the world, a world in which everything has a place. You need to think about that carefully. Everything has a place. The good, the bad, and the ugly is quite different than what is generally on offer today. And by today, I'm referring mostly to what we hear in the church, actually. There's many Christians who seem eager to escape many of the realities of this present world by appealing to heavenly realities. And we heard maybe some of that in our other readings. If I just close my ears and eyes to the problem, maybe I'll be able to find peace. Maybe I'll be able to endure. Besides, there's always heaven, right? Heaven is going to make everything all right. Now, you have to excuse these little summary statements that I'm going to make, but that's kind of like the life drools, heaven rules position, right? The position that Karl Marx mocked when he said that religion is the opiate of the masses. You know, anything can happen, just kind of ignore that, and it's going to be all better on the other side. But of course, to embrace what I'm calling, what I would call this escapist faith, in quotes, this vague hope, is to misunderstand, I think, what's going on in the other two readings we had today, which say things like, faith is the assurance of things hoped for, the conviction of things not seen. Or in Jesus' words, to store up for ourselves unfailing treasure in heaven. More on that in a minute. On the other hand, kind of superficial contemporary Christian spirituality on this hand, but then we have the other hand, and maybe this is its own polar extremes, and there's lots of positions in between. You'll have to make up your own minds on that. There's a lot of popular alternatives to these superficial expressions of spirituality that want to get into the face of the uncertainties of life and even of our impending death and say things like, I'm going to face this head on. I don't have long to live. I'm going to seize the day. Carpe diem. I'm going to live my life now. And I'm going to do what I really want to do. Let's call this the polar opposite of heaven rules and life drools. This is heaven drools, life rules. Okay? Gets better, believe me. The poetry. You won't know what to do with it at the end. The phrase was made, of course, famous. Carpe diem, that is, in popular culture in the movie Dead Poets Society, in which Robin Williams plays the role of a new teacher in a traditional private school. Who here has seen that flick? Yeah, it's getting dated, but it's still a good movie. Early in the movie, he gathers his pupils around the cabinet in the school hallway that displays the photographs of sporting heroes and trophies from the past, many of them now dead, you know, the brown photographs that have changed over time. And he invites the students to imagine what these past heroes would say to them if they had a voice. And then they're standing there, kind of in reverie, looking at these pictures and trophies. And he moves among them, whispering in their ear, Carpe diem. Carpe diem. Carpe diem. Seize the day. The remainder of the movie, the boys set out to squeeze all the life they can out of their school days. Often humorous things result, but tragedy ensues as well. Now, the teacher's philosophy is, to some extent, if we were going to take those two extremes, we're not sure actually whether the teacher believes in an afterlife or not, but that's one of the controversies about Ecclesiastes. The teacher's philosophy, to some extent, is that we should seize the day. We should seize the day, fleeting though it is. And he says this explicitly: I know that there is nothing better for them than to be happy and enjoy themselves as long as they shall live. It is indeed the appropriate response to the totality of reality, the totality of the times that are ultimately beyond our control and that simply are, with all of their polar opposites imaginable, that we should cease worrying so much about things working out. You know, some of us probably would be a lot better off if we listened to less cable news, right? And just concentrate on living joyfully in the moment that is currently given to us. So that's kind of the position of this teacher. But what marks him out from the superficial spirituality on the one hand and this secular carpe diem philosophy on the other is that it's centered on God. Let's call this, get ready, God rules, therefore heaven doesn't drool, life doesn't drool, both are cool. I warned you. I mean, it's the poet laureate. I can see it. No, it won't happen, will it? To seize the day, to live fully in the moment, is an expression then of faith first. A faith that leads to fulfillment. So much of Christian spirituality these days seems to have it the other way around. Self-fulfillment first, and then tag on a bit of God and spirituality as needed. But this, as we were seeing last week, leads to the desire for gain and leads to the despair that we talked about last week, as we realize that all of our attempts at self-fulfillment fall short, don't last, and then we need to do more or something different. And it just feels like work at the end of the day. But to seize the day, to find self-fulfillment in our relationships, our work, and our pleasure, which is clearly what the teacher wants us to do, is to receive those things and to live into those things as a gift from God. Indeed, it was faith in what they did not see, but trusted nevertheless, that led Abraham and Sarah on their great journey that changed this world. They were not escaping this world, but living into what God had called them to do in this world, even though they did not see its ultimate fulfillment. It is the forward-looking for others focus that Hebrews is highlighting when it talks about the conviction of things not seen. To live well in this world is to live into and from God's great mission of embracing all of creation as persons made in the image of a God who is forgiving, who desires the interconnection and the interpenetration even of all things in creation, that we might together enjoy what God has done and made, and that everything might flourish, rather than just following the whim of the moment, what we think might feel good, as the boys in the movie did, which ended up in tragedy for them. We are called to live from a vision of God, and then from that, in the moment. Self-fulfillment comes ultimately from living in the light of God, right where we are. And since all times and realities have their place, we can embrace the different seasons in our lives as opportunities to express this sense of living in the light of God. You know, it's really assuring to me. It comforts me to know that I never have to live with this fear of missing out when I'm living with God. Hashtag FOMO. FOMA. What is it? FOMO? FOMO. Right. I never have to have the fear that I'm not living heroically enough. There's a place for the small and the great, for the private and the public, for the heroic and the ordinary. All is part of God's whole. I'm reassured by Ecclesiastes that if everything has a season, then it's okay to become older. I don't have to just ridiculously hang on to what is passing. It's okay to be in grief. It's okay to recognize that there's only so much any of us can do. I can't comprehend the totality of things. I can't change everything, but I can live faithfully in this moment, in this time, with you and you and you and you with me. And I think this is what Jesus means when he talks about laying up treasure in heaven, which is not a place, by the way, in the Gospels. Heaven isn't about a place. It's a synonym for God. And so Mark talks about the kingdom of God, and Matthew and Luke often talk about the kingdom of heaven or God. And when we get to heaven, that is, to God, in the next phase of our existence, however that will work its way out, and it will work its way out, we will see it as not the destination we were pining for, but the extension, another time, another season, that will be just what we need then and there. And so we can live now in our time. We can live now leaving the incomprehensible whole to God, but alive to this moment, alive to what God is alive to. And then we will find that when the Son of Man has come and will come and will already be doing his will. Amen.